Great. This is the third talk in this series. So I wanted to sort of kind of summarize and explain a little bit of like what has been happening. And I want to maybe explain that by kind of making this observation. So what we have been doing, there are three important dichotomies. So one is zero dimensional versus D dimensional. Two, free versus interacting. And of course, we also have classical versus quantum. And so it's maybe not even a fair use of the word versus, because like the right hand side is just by far more important, and that's kind of what we are trying to understand. But at least for the purpose of exposition, we've been making this distinction and trying to understand like more and more. So indeed, first lecture was zero dimensional interacting classical. That was the first lecture. I mean, I mean to get to quantum, so I'll say a bit more afterwards. And second lecture by Kevin was D-dimensional free quantum. That's what happened yesterday. And maybe one thing I want to point out is that, as I said, like we really want to get to this place, but as long as we actually choose at least one of them kind of on a simpler frame, it's pretty accessible. And that's what we have been doing, right? So Kevin did this, and essentially this is done. I'm going to say more. And what should I say then? Right, so we should also explain D-dimensional interacting classical theory, and then finally, D-dimensional interacting quantum theory. So that's kind of what I'm planning to explain today. So today the goal is try to give an idea of maybe first step of toward understanding this thing. By first step, I intend to give a sort of the definition. But I won't be able to sort of discuss many examples. I mean, some features are going to be sort of studied in the exercise. But the goal is to get to the definition. And then we are going to see computations from tomorrow. OK. So I just wanted to summarize this just to orient you better. And I also wanted to say a few more words about what has happened, like more concretely. So this is summary of what has happened. We know basically everything about the free theory. That was the what Kevin discussed. And I mean, everything written here was written before at some point, and I hope people are clear on this point. the thing I want to point out is just some algebraic structure that is present in this quantum case. I mean, of course, it was used in Kevin's lecture, but I just want to sort of formalize the idea because I think that's possibly helpful. So the main upshot, say in zero-dimensional case, was to think of this complex, this divergence complex, right? You want you to make sense of this integration. But integration was, you can think of this integration in a homological way by thinking of drum complex, but then realize that that's actually equivalent to divergence complex. And important point is that this was not a commuting diagram of algebra. It was as a cochain complex, and that was kind of the giving some structure here. And I just want to observe that once more in a more formal way. So what I'm saying is that if mu was, let's say, let's say X is sort of the vector space. this is our favorite form of measure. In that case, this measure looked like this. I mean, Kevin wrote this down, in coordinates like this. But if you think through, this is what it is. And I'm going to multiply this by h bar, then rewrite in this way. Then still, these polyvector fields, this entire complex, together with this, is going to be a co-chain complex. So so this is sort of the thing we care at the quantum level. So this is sort of the quantum factorization algebra Kevin considered, even when this X is sort of the, say, smooth functions on N. But somehow the factorization algebra structure is here is trivial because I'm working with a zero-dimensional theory. There is not much open set you can consider, so you don't really see sort of the that sort of thing. Okay. The point is that just like I formalized this a structure you should expect to see in classical field theory in terms of P0 algebra, you can make a definition abstracting this property. So, which is balanced and Schoenfeld algebra, maybe BD algebra as well. It's a triple. So multiplication multiplication and Poisson bracket. Homological degree 1. And now this is a flat over. Because I have h bar, I need to add here. An important property is that, certainly it was observed in Kevin's lecture, but the point is that this d is not a derivation. So this is not a commutative, not a CDGA, commutative differential graded algebra, and its failure is exactly measured by this Poisson bracket. Right, and so by construction, whenever you start with field theory setting with an action functioner, you are producing such an example. And kind of working this out in a concrete way in coordinates, which I've written here, is a part of an exercise. Graded commutative algebra. Okay. Another thing maybe I want to say is that in classical field theory setting, we kind of decided to work with this kind of dichotomy of free versus interacting, meaning we start with a free theory and then trying to understand when this, interaction function I is actually defining a theory by classical Master equation. So classical Master equation was that given this setting and maybe P0 algebra, you're asking solution to this equation. In the same way, now I'm going to be, if I have such setting, sort of the canonical BD algebra setting for the free part. It's free because I'm only seeing Q, as opposed to, you know, bracketing with additional thing. What is called the quantum master equation is this. And this is kind of the sort of quantum gauge consistency condition, if you think about. And once you have this, then you can add this bracketing with I term additionally, and then actually you can observe that that defines a cochain complex. And you can also write this as in this way. And from this way of thinking, one thing I want to point out is that because this was a second order differential operator, you are picking up this Poisson bracket term. So in coordinates, what I'm saying is that this delta term is this form of second order differential operator. So if you really write down this together with some polynomial function and try to write down, what you are ending up is this Poisson bracket. In coordinates, maybe this axiom is also clear. That is also in exercise. I mean, it is kind of assumed and used in Kevin's lecture, but just I want to make sure that people really understand. And then maybe a BV or BD quantization of a P0 algebra A is BD algebra A hat such that I don't know. If you are familiar with sort of usual story of deformation quantization, you sort of know what I mean. Here, what I mean to say is that starting with some kind of the, what I'm trying to say is that if you had this BD algebra, by forgetting this H bar, you recover the classical case, right? This IDS and the polyvector fields, that's kind of what I observed in my first lecture. This BD quantization is kind of the adding this formal parameter and trying to find this delta such that its classical limit is reproducing the original P0 algebra. Algebra is on commutative. But that's right. So quantum structure is by checking sort of somehow you should think that the cohomology is capturing sort of the structure you would expect to see. Because this differential is not a derivation for this product. If it were, then cohomology is still a commutative algebra. But because it is not, that failure is captured by some non-trivial quantum information. That's sort of the idea that's kind of abstracted from this definition. And that's kind of the how sort of Kevin presented his canonical commutation relation as well. So exactly that part was capturing the non-commutativity. Yeah. Great. But I think when you say differential graded algebra, like, don't you mean this?
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. So it's graded commutative algebra?
It's a graded commutative algebra
with this, yes. With this axiom satisfied.
With that
right. So I don't want to say differential graded algebra because I think that's kind of usually, right? Yeah, I think that's right.
Huh?
D squared is zero. It's a, yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm. Not derivation with respect to this. Okay, great. So where am I? So yes. So we covered, I claim now that we covered zero dimensional interacting quantum theory. Kevin certainly covered d-dimensional free quantum theory. Now what we need to cover is d-dimensional interacting classical. So d-dimensional interacting classical and d-dimensional interacting quantum. This is what we need to cover. Is the story clear? Okay.
You're on the bottom region. EQ maps to OQ.
EQ maps.
Right. What is E plus Q?
Sorry, this was the sort of minus one shift is in practice space.
Okay. So Q is the.
Right, the linear vector field. So differential. So this is just a kind of cochain complex, but together with the. Compatible minus one shift simplex structure, which was inducing Pijarajra structure here. Right. So if you think about how did he define zero dimensional interacting classical theory? That's exactly what I explained here. You just write down this natural thing and trying to solve classical Maxwell equation. That was giving a definition, essentially, of zero-dimensional classical field theory, interacting one. Now, so the natural idea is that try to write down this, which you can write down even for d-dimensional theory. So for d-dimensional interacting classical, and then try to solve classical Maxwell equation. You may think. But this is a little too naive. For two reasons. First of all, Poisson bracket is not defined on functions on this space of fields. If you remember Kevin's lecture, he sort of some representative, but if you did think of delta function as a representative, which are perfectly fine functional, is this kind of is a Poisson bracket is going to lead you to nonsense multiplication of distributions. So this is not defined in general. And but what is more important is that. We don't really want an arbitrary functional. Not arbitrary functional is kind of not physically meaningful. So I want to explain what I mean by that. So far, in a sense, was kind of the recap and summary and kind of the plan. And the second part, let's say, is what is called the local functionals. So you can follow what BGC is doing. I'm giving a kind of way to produce your own example.
So like you're saying that like if I just sit down and write for a while until I find some functional I that solves this equation, then I can say, I've written down a quantum field.
Classical field theory. D-dimensional interacting classical field theory. So far. Once you write down local functional satisfying this thing. So what I want to say is that this was nonsense, but once I add this log, then now this makes sense, and you can try to solve classical master equation. That is the spoiler of this section. Once again, local functionals are going to be defined kind of the motivated by physics. Once I define that, the claim is that this Poisson bracket. Not only this Poisson bracket is well defined, by thinking of an element there and solving this, I'm claiming that that's giving a definition of D-dimensional interacting classical theory. Okay.
Top board, that's the free theory by solving the classical master equation.
Right. Exactly. So, right. This Q. Which was the linear vector field, was coming from sort of Hamiltonian vector field of a quadratic function. So yes. Yeah, quadratic meaning free. Okay. So the idea is that a functional F is for local if it's a kth homogeneous component, in terms of sort of Taylor series, is of the form like this. So what I'm saying is that this is exactly to capture the idea of locality. So any interactions really happens sort of at the same points, and there's no spooky action at a distance. That's exactly captured by this expression. Sorry, maybe I should have said these are differential operators. No. I mean linear, yeah, sorry, yes. Yeah, order is, yes. Sorry? Okay, so let me make an actual definition and then compare with the sort of this idea. So let's say this M was compact for now, but yeah, I didn't make a definition yet. I don't know. I mean, this is kind of sort of good definition anyway, but local functional on E is where this is densely bundled. So say top form for an oriented manifold. This is a sheaf of differential operator. And this sheaf of sections of infinite jets. So if you're like not familiar with these words, it's fine. I think the idea is like really just here. What down here, I just mean that, so given any phi, you get sort of density in such a way that its dependence on each point P is through its infinite jets, only through its infinite jets at that point. And for comparison, of course, what I need to say is that if M is compact, what can I say? So given this sort of density thing, you can, no. You can integrate, and that's giving a actual functional and number. Right.
They are.
Right.
But you said this can depend on the like higher jets.
Right. So so this is Cauley differential operator. Sort of the it can depend on sort of higher order. Like Laplacian, like that's you differentiate to. Second order, that's, I thought that.
Sorry, that's not, yeah, sorry, that's what I
meant. That's what I was answering, like, yeah, that's right, yes.
I didn't think, yes.
Okay. Good. So. So it's like, is this not good enough?
So the differential operators are met, it's approximately like they're sort of polynomial, and they look like some kind of special algebra. And functions on jets are really good.
Right. So whenever I write myself functions, it's a symmetric algebra of a linear dual octet. Right.
What are the properties of this map you wrote down on the last part? Is it an equation?
I think so. Okay. So I. Let's see.
Should that be L of y on the far right?
Oh, sorry. Of course. Right, so what I'm saying is that I can recycle this board. So for D-dimensional interaction classical field theory, I think of local functionals with this Q and bracket. So part of the claim here is that the bracket is well-defined if you restrict to local functionals. And you're going to sort of just understand why by doing some exercise. So somehow, if you do some exercise, I think it's going to be clear like why this makes sense. And then you're also going to see like what kind of things are local functionals, what is not in the exercise. And just try to solve this cholesterol muscle equation, and that is going to give a definition of D-dimensional interacting classical field theory. Sorry? How hard? I think it's not, like classical muscle equation is, I don't know. I guess it depends on the context. So sometimes this is not that difficult. Then, yep.
I mean, if I want to find a theory of the real scalar field with Laplace or classical and potential.
I mean, like in that case, you can just kind of, the usual thing is really this computation. The Poisson bracket is determined by this.
Okay, so it gets automatically.
Yeah. It's pretty easy.
So that the difficulty
comes
like on
page
theory.
Yeah, exactly. So this exactly.
So
it's supergravity. Oh. I mean again like that would depend on how supergravity is presented. Okay, any other questions? That's right. So once you have this, what you're getting is this expression, which you may write in this way or in this way. But once you express in this way, cohomological degree zero part, in the simplest case, is exactly sort of the, looks like the Jacobian. So given S, critical locus looks like Jacobian, and zeroth cohomology is exactly kind of the functions of this critical locus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of important point. I kind of mentioned it but didn't write down. The things worth repeating. In this kind of BV framework, maybe that's kind of a confusing thing to say. But one way to say that is that without imposing this kind of a differential, this is sort of space of extended fields. But once you add differential, you're already kind of solving this critical locus equation.
For the
this makes sense for even when I have interaction.
Yeah, but the original thing.
Original theory, yes. Mm-hmm, right. That's right. Okay. Any other question? So if not, I can move on to now for D-dimensional interacting quantum. That's right.
Why is this not? Sorry, why is the bracket now of the time for
I kind of the, like refer that to like I mean defer that discussion to exercise session because I kind of the like, from the exercise it's going to be clear like what kind of things Also it's kind of the good to get some feel for local functionals and what is not. So I think I recommend doing exercise.
So can I just
Presumably, your action was already of this local function of 4 because of each.
I write down some local function. Mm-hmm. So it's not guaranteed to satisfy the classical master.
It is kind of because the way I was explaining thing was that this, you know, this E was coming from sort of the minus one shifted thing of say F. So because S was defined on F, bracketing with itself is 0. Because bracketing is coming from the pairing, natural pairing of the cotangent fiber and the
okay,
base.
So
that's
important. Logically, anytime I write down an action, a local action in that way, it's guaranteed to satisfy the classical master.
Correct. I mean, it is like in the same. I mean, like basically, kind of that's how I present it, right? In the beginning, yeah.
So somehow, like these things are tautological from the perspective.
That's right, but somehow it's going to bias a lot later. That's the maybe just trust. I don't know. Yeah. We are kind of building up sort of the you know machinery to make some argument later, I guess. Oh, I see. That's maybe, I see. So the problem is that, oh, sorry, yeah, that's a great point. Thanks. That's actually kind of what I wanted to explain.
Okay.
I mean to say that in the zero dimensional case, the argument I gave was kind of giving that. On the other hand, in this d-dimensional case, we are going to see some difference, and that's going to make things harder. And then in general, that's not guaranteed. So this naive argument would work in zero-dimensional case if things are well defined. But the point is that it is not going to. That's exactly what I'm going to say now. So naively, you'd want to write this and try to solve a quantum master equation and if you can solve that, then you can just kind of do the same thing and you produce what you want it to. But the claim is that now this BV Laplacian not defined, even if you restrict your interest to local functionals. So you may think, like, why don't we just restrict even further and then kind of maybe try to make sense of this? It's kind of doesn't really work in that way. And also, this local functional is here for a reason. It's really important to allow all these possible interactions as defined by these local functionals. So, and indeed, this is not a problem in a sense of just technical nature. It is, this problem is just there for physical reason. So this is related to this famous UV divergence issue. Okay, so now I want to sort of explain the definition of quantum field theory. And this part, at least the way I present, and the formalism is developed is due to Kevin. So Kevin has a book exactly on this topic, making a definition and do something about that. And sort of my talk is sort of the first step, just explaining sort of the main definition. And there are a lot of things one can do with that, and it's going to be discussed, I guess, tomorrow. Okay. So what should we do? First of all, we need to understand what's wrong with this. But let's get back to the zero-dimensional case, okay? There, you have minus one shift is symplectic. And out of this, you can produce Boson bracket. Boson bracket lives here. And understanding this is also part of an exercise. Inverting this omega to get a Boson vector field. Then, I mean, of course, in coordinates, this Boson vector field would look like this, exactly. So from that, it is clear that this BV Laplacian is given by contracting K. So it's a second order differential operator. It is vanishing on the like sim 0 and sim 1, and sim 2 is kind of contracting with K and it's extended. And once you understand this, then this also Boson bracket is also coming from BV differential, from the BD action. Right? In exercise, I ask sort of the how, ask think more about this point. So, so K is really a bivector, like this,
yeah.
And that's kind of exactly the Boson bracket you write down using the bivector. Exactly.
Okay.
Any other question? Yeah. Great. So, what am I going to say? So, in general, meaning in D-dimensional theory, you still have this sort of data, sort of the symplectic minus one shift symplectic pairing on this space of fields. You can certainly try to produce this K0, what is called the K0. So living in the sort of the symmetry. So this is another notation for scene two. What I'm saying is that because of the way field theory works, infinite dimensional nature, and then trying to invert this omega, you are going to find K0 living here. And what is this K0? K0 is exactly what's inverting this omega. And how do you write that down? Like this. So this omega is for x. You can pair things. K0 is something that's paired up with this phi and to yield itself. Okay. So I didn't explain yet. But if you try to solve this, you'd end up with a distribution. So distributional section. Remember, our E was defined in terms of sort of the sections of bundle. So you can take distributional sections. And you can imagine from the way it looks, this K must be some kind of delta function. And for scalar field theory, I asked to identify what this pairing is, K0 is. But essentially, it is delta function. Okay. I think now I can erase this. Now you may anticipate a problem. Here, the way I was defining this delta was contracting with this K. Now, the naive idea following this zero dimensional case would be try to do that, contracting with this K0. But it is distributional. So if you kind of contracting with K0 isn't defined. It is going to become clear if you do the exercise. So this is the fundamental problem. Okay. Right, exactly. That's right. But this is kind of that's not going to happen, is it? Yeah. Okay. So somehow the idea is so physical level, at the physical level, I'll say the idea of effective field theory is kind of going to save us. And of course, there are a lot of things one can say about this. But I just kind of actually just wanted to focus on mathematical part today. So I wrote a kind of short essay in this exercise session. So you can just kind of read and maybe ask questions about that and ask maybe physicists. I'm sure they understand these things better. So let me just kind of focus on mathematical part. But hopefully, sort of the once you understand this mathematical part and then read that small essay, you can understand even physically what's going on. So mathematically, the idea would be modify this K0. This is, I think, what is called a regularization in physics. So what exactly do I mean by modification? And if you think about scalar field theory, there really K0 is a diagonal delta function. And a good modification, say for Laplacian, is known, which is the Higg kernel. So scalar field theory. There is a Higg kernel regularization. Namely, there is this KT such that this works. So when t is zero, it recovers the original thing. The point here is that by regularization, I mean, and modification, the point is that this is smooth. Because you know this is a smoothing operator. I guess so, yeah. Someone said something? But our interest is not just a scalar field theory. We want to understand some general theory. So let's get back to our general setting. We have this Q operator of cohomological degree 1. So one makes a definition. A case fixing operator QGF is a differential operator of cohomological degree minus 1, and also it is kind of self adjoint with respect to this given pairing omega. But I think it's better to give examples just to get you familiar with this step. Sorry, I forgot to add one thing. The important point is that such that the commutator is a Laplacian. So example. So first, are always scalar field theory. So Q is this Laplacian. QGF is just the identity. Then its commutator is certainly Laplacian. Another example. I think these two have been our favorite examples so far. Transcendental theory. Our Q was given by Drum differential, but gauge fixing if I choose a metric, I can take just a join. Then, of course, the commutator is going to give you Laplacian. It is a choice. So we need to make a remark. Sort of the main construction. Depends on sort of the gauge fixing. But as sort of homotopy data. So in terms of homotopy data. And what I would say is that in practice, the space of gauge fixings is contractible. So in the case of transimons, as you can see, it's a space of metrics, which is contractible. So it does depend on this gauge fixing, but that's not really going to make us worried. I don't know definition. All the examples are just coming from all of this nature, or the examples that I kind of work with, like D or their bar and just take out join. Can someone give like precise definition? Mm-hmm. I think Chris is going to explain that in one of TA sessions. I mean, there's much to say about. Yeah. Okay. Any other question? Okay, so now the idea is that now we use this KT to define, or let's say KL, to define this BV Laplacian. And now there is no problem because this KT is a smooth thing. Now you can contract. Okay, maybe implicit here was that I'm making a definition of this head corner for arbitrary theory using this D. I hope that was clear. Sorry? Oh, so KL is KT when T is L, and KT is defined in this way. Correct. So for QGF, which leads to this D. KT is defined this way. And that is going to, of course, lead us to Poisson bracket at, let me say the word scale L, because that's what you said in effective field theory. Then, this is identity.
No, I mean, like, is there a notion of gauge identity around?
No, this is just kind of the word, I guess. So in the gauge theory, it's kind of the corresponding to gauge fixing, but I don't this is just a word, gauge fixing. I don't really know how physicists think about things. I think it's kind of the thinking of the, related to thinking of the image of this map. I think that's kind of the, how, yeah.
Maybe you should just say that, like, I mean, like, in Simon's theory, the choice of gauge is like the omega 0 goes to omega 1. You can change your A by anything in the image of D.
Right, but gauge fixing is that I'm trying to think of only the image of this QGF. I think that's kind of what I mean by gauge fixing. Isn't that what physicists say about? Exactly. So yeah, I mean, like, it does recover those things. That's why this has its name. But it can be used, like, in bigger generality. Any other questions or comments?
So,
where? I'm talking about sort of at the level of E most of the time, I guess, right? Right, but I'm saying, like, what I'm talking about here is at the level of E. I'm not thinking about sort of. You mean this? Oh, yeah. It's a local function. Sorry. Oh, I see. Any other questions? So, you know, our, what we are after is trying to make sense of, so maybe it's actually, I can write it here. So we wanted I said something wrong. So let me say it right. We wanted h bar del I zero. That's what we wanted. Now, but we realize that this doesn't make sense. So that's why we introduce this kind of the scale or modification. Now I want to write down using this thing. This equation. And let me say this is a quantum master equation at scale L. I'm going to say more. Definition is about this I, but we are going to find IL for each L, and then we are going to relate them. And for this, I'm thinking of more general functionals. So sorry? That's right. So what I'm going to say is that what's going to solve this equation is going to depend on scale L. And from effective field theory point of view, that depends on length scale L. So now it's not like UV. So it's not expected to be local. So I need to make that precise. Right. This is smooth now. So things are already defined. Any other questions?
Maybe you're about to say that where is I live now in that equation, and there's an O of E from a power series.
That's right. That's right. So it's kind of the really kind of the smooth now. So induced from smoothing. So what we are aiming. Is. Collection like this. So we are trying to find what is called the effective action. So depending on length scale. Doesn't need to be specified. Such that IR serves quantum master equation at scale L. And again, as I said, sort of how you would end up with this idea of effective action, that's kind of explained in the exercise sheet. But you should have asked one question, which is, how exactly this KL and the original thing we cared about, namely K0, they're related? KL and K0 related. So, because you know what we have done, certainly what we care is this K0. But because we couldn't work with K0, we decided to work with this modification. But this may look kind of arbitrary. We need to explain like in what sense this KL and K0 are related for our purpose, right? We want you to understand sort of quantum field theory to find the solution to quantum master equation, and if this K0 and KR kind of if there is no relation, then there is no point. We need to explain sort of the how they are related. Okay, so the claim is that one can introduce another gadget, a propagator, this way. Then proposition is that KL and KE epsilon are is P gives a cochain homotopy sort of with respect to Q between K epsilon and KR. Is the claim clear? So we want to understand the relation between these different KTs. And by making a definition, I'm claiming that they are homotopic by a particular explicit cochain homotopy. So I think it is a kind of confusing point because like something is happening only on the X part and like the things like that. So maybe kind of giving a proof may help. Sketch a proof. So you know, KT was kernel for this operator. P, by definition, is a kernel for QGF E minus TD. Still an operator. So when I say it's giving a cochain homotopy with respect to Q, I need to understand sort of the bracketing with Q and P. But I can do this with this operator. So let's do this. QGF. Is which is QQGF T minus DD D minus DD, which I think is E to D minus epsilon D minus epsilon minus KD. Huh? Oh, sorry. LD, I think. And because you understand this operator to be cochain homotopy between these two things, now you understand that you can check that using this, and then property of this P being kernel of that. You can check. Sorry. Q, if you apply Q on P, P has two pieces, then you get this K epsilon minus K L. Because if you think about, I mean, it's kind of the, again, kind of generalized and it's kind of the made up for kind of our application. But in scalar field theory, this was a really identity. And this is really kind of the usual propagator. But now it does depend on this gauge fixing. So it may not be sort of the what you may call as a propagator, but oftentimes it is actually the same. Any other question? Kind of running out of time. Okay. So P lives in sim E, sim 2, degree 1, because I applied the QGF. K was living in sim 2 E1. If T was non-zero, then it's really kind of smooth. But if T is zero, then it's kind of the distribution. Q was defined on E.
Yes.
So it's defined here. Any other questions? Okay. So now, you know, if you remember, how we define this BV Laplacian, we are just doing contraction with this K sub L. That made sense. You can also define contraction with any such thing, in particular, given this P. You can define this contraction. So define as a contraction with this. You can define that. Then essentially from here, del P epsilon Q is del delta L minus epsilon. You can believe this because you know, essentially this is a contraction from KL, this is contraction from K epsilon. Oh, now I realize that maybe I'm using minus KL to define delta L to make this work. So let me kind of maybe explain what's happening now. So we were trying to understand, say, you're trying to make sense of quantum Russell equation. And for that, we define modification. And then using that, we define this BV Laplacian, and hence BV bracket. And then the quantum Russell equation at scale L did make sense. But then we realized that maybe we didn't quite understand what's happening. Because the relation between KL and K epsilon, that's kind of the, was unclear. But then we noticed that this KL and K epsilon, they are cochain homotopy for any L and epsilon. Now, what I want to say is that because the corresponding, say, Poisson structures are equivalent, and because corresponding BV differentials are equivalent, it is natural to expect that quantum Russell equation for one is equivalent to quantum Russell equation for the other in an appropriate sense, if I define this IL to, like, in an appropriate way. So that's why, where we are getting it. So, definition, A homotopy normalization, group flow, is a map. Define is an operation defined by this expression. And there are several ways to motivate this. But a fact which I ask you to think about in exercise is try to understand this in terms of Feynman diagrams. So you know, Feynman diagrams, it was kind of about contracting propagator and interaction. And you can see that that's exactly what's happening, propagator interaction, and then sort of the powers of H bar is kind of the exactly given in this way. Oh, sorry. So, K epsilon L. Give me this. Sorry. This was sort of my space of fields. Sorry? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure. Right. So now I want to make a proposition. Like there are actually like a lot of things one can say about this thing. It's a really important operation. But I want to end with some things. So maybe that can be explained in the next lecture by Kevin, how you actually do work with this. But one thing important I want to point out is that this functioner satisfies QME at L if and only if, sorry, epsilon, if and only if WP epsilon L I satisfies QME at length scale L. So this is partly answering Davide's question or comment, because if this I is what is called the I epsilon, sort of effective action at energy scale or length scale epsilon, that's saying that by flowing through this thing, the end result is still solving master equation at that scale L. So it's kind of the defining this IL to be image of this I epsilon under that. So once you believe this, then what I'm going to say is that once you know so one I epsilon, it knows everything about other IL, except for zero, I guess. Zero is different. You cannot just kind of a contract from arbitrary functions. That's what you are getting at. And proof is actually really not difficult. And you can just do it yourself. But the idea is really that because K epsilon and K L are homotopic, and this del epsilon and del R are homotopic through P, that idea can be used. Essentially, you need to use this identity together with this expression, maybe exercise. I didn't put it on exercise, but maybe I repeat after my talk. So, I want to at least end with a reasonable definition of quantum field theory. But before that, let me note the following. You may ask that, you know, what I'm saying here is that once I have I epsilon, I have this IR by doing this operation. So I having all this I epsilon didn't help. Also, once I can solve QME here, it automatically solves QME there as well. So what's the point of considering all this? You may ask. But the point is that main point is that we want it I local functional, at least kind of at the level of idea, so absorbing QME. And the main point is really about this locality. Physically, we want you to understand local functional solving quantum master equation. That was how we motivated the subject. But because of the UV divergence, we couldn't make sense of this QME, like the on the nose there. Now we understand the possible relation to other things, but then we completely lost the information about locality. So that must be captured, and that is important point. But I want to make a definition in two steps to emphasize some points. So, definition of, say, a pre-quantum field theory. Is such a collection. So everything is kind of just kind of the functionals, not necessarily local, and it is not going to be, such that first it does satisfy this RG flow. And second, let me just say this way. This becomes local as L tends to zero. And you know, this is kind of the functional. You can kind of try to see its asymptotic behavior as L goes zero. And you kind of, what's the local? It's kind of the basically supported on the diagonal, and you're trying to say that it's kind of exponentially decaying. That sort of idea. You can make sense of that in a technical way. So I want to state a theorem of Kevin. There is a non-canonical bijection between say these local functionals and such pre theories. So what I'm saying here is that given a local functional, you can produce pre theory depending on the choice. So plus just means that it is kind of the cubic modulo H bar, so interaction part. So, sorry, the question was, what is this plus? And I was saying that it is kind of the, supposed to be kind of capturing the interaction term. So at least modulo h bar is at least cube. And this is where this... this does depend on the choice of renormalization scheme. And this is involving like counter terms and some Feynman-Dyer computations, and it's going to be discussed in more detail tomorrow, I think. The point is that although people may think that this is a fundamental object, like local functionals, indeed it is not. Like what you can observe in this world is kind of the not about the length scale zero, like not like it's this infinite energy. It's about some finite energy scale and information of all these things. That's kind of the what is a theory. More is kind of discussed in this exercise. And can I have 2.5 minutes more? And a quantum field theory, say in the BB framework, is a pre-QFT with IL satisfying QME at L for some L and hence all L. So there are like it's really kind of the two-step procedure. I mean, it is kind of there is another theorem that that is important, but let me not say that. And let me sort of say a few words about like mathematically how this is maybe helping people. First of all, given local functional using this a theorem, you can try to produce these pre-theories, but it involves like a lot of kind of the calculations. So in practice, like really keeping track of everything is pretty hard. But in some nice cases or examples, many examples of interest, turns out these counter terms are not there. So naive thing you can write down turns out to work. Then the real problem is mostly about understanding this QME. Now this QME, solving QME is a non-trivial problem, and it does have obstruction, and it can be studied by kind of the usual deformation obstruction theory. But at the end of the day, once you find a condition guaranteeing that your obstruction vanishes, you can try to understand a lot about the theory. So the way I set up, this I infinity, like energy length scale infinity, is kind of what you should be seeing at the like IR. So you kind of integrate out or non-zero modes, things like that you may heard about. So you, in a sense, you should think of this as a kind of giving a partition function of your theory. So given some theory, say, I don't know, Chern-Simons. So for example, I think Kevin mentioned the work of Greg Gilliam. You get this A hat genus. And Kevin has another work producing Witten genus by computing this thing. What I'm saying is that starting with a sort of action functional, say as Fishy say, try to run the argument, trying to show that when this obstruction vanishes, in which case you can try to compute this I infinity, and it does produce non-trivial invariants. So this is kind of something you can see like even before getting deeply to the level of factorization algebra, and you can still produce some interesting invariants. Okay, let me stop here. So it's anomaly. Yeah, exactly. So for example, in this case, it's kind of the 1D topological quantum mechanics, and there's no anomaly. And I think this is kind of the, what is the name? 1D quantum fiction assignments? Huh?
Beta gamma system?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Beta gamma system, the anomaly is given by sort of the second Chern character. And Xin Li and Si Li have studied B model, and you can see that, of course, like if your manifold is collapsed out, then anomaly vanishes. So things as expected, you can see from the first principles computing these sorts of things. Obstructions to satisfy quantum mass equation. So if you assume that this action is kind of the solving quantum mass equation up to like modulo h to the n plus 1, trying to solve it, like trying to find a lift and solve it up to next order, you are going to write down quantum mass equation, which you want it to be 0, but that's in general non-zero. And you can think through, and turns out this is a cohomology class in local functioner, sort of the. So deformation obstruction complex can be seen in terms of classical theory. On the other hand, this obstruction class is defined in terms of quantum theory. So by computing this obstruction class and seeing if it vanishes or not, you can kind of tell. If it is non-vanishing, then you cannot do quantization.